the Democratic Party has become basically a party of like white elites virtue signaling that they care about everybody else. And the Republican Party has become the party of the working class.
Welcome to Premier Christian Radio's Babel Undone podcast featuring Archbishop Joseph D'Souza. Bishop D'Souza is a renowned Christian intellectual and human rights activist from India who leads the Good Shepherd Movement and the All India Christian Council. And I'm Johnny Moore, an American evangelical who serves as the president of the Congress of Christian Leaders. I come from America. The Archbishop comes from India. So naturally, we meet in London.
So this is a special episode of Babel Undone. And I have here my co-host, the Reverend Dr. Johnny Moore, the president of the Congress of Christian Leaders and the head of JDA Worldwide. The topic that we are discussing, and I'm asking questions for the listeners of the Babel Undone podcast, has to do with the U.S. Election. I don't know how much people in the U.S. know how eagerly the rest of the world was waiting to see the outcome of the election. And like so many places, there were always the two divides. We are both here in London. I could see how The Economist and others were Kamala Harris leaning. I saw how the Indian press was Kamala leaning. And as I observed the election, and I travel and I know what's going on, I knew that this was going to be a very special election. And I make no secret of the fact that I did want Trump to win, because I felt there were huge civilizational issues. So when I ask you these questions, I want to get a sense of where do you think Trump will go?
I don't know what to do with this, Bishop. We're the ones doing the interviewing. You're interviewing me. So I have to figure this out. You know, it's a funny thing. You're talking about how people in the world pay attention to the election. You know, we come to London to record Babel Undone, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. And almost always, if I'm here on a Sunday or midweek, I attend a church here in the UK. I won't say which church, but I always attend the same church. And this Sunday, I was at the church, and the pastor was saying, he was using an example of being stressed and anxiety. And what was the example he was using? The American election. Yep. He was saying, as a Brit, you know, I was very anxious about the American election. I'm like, well, what do you think we feel if you feel this way? Like, and I do think that's the power of the United States of America in human history. Like, what happens in the United States affects the entire world. It just is the case. And what just happened in the United States is a historic realignment of our political parties. You know, it's always been like the Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. But Donald Trump didn't just win the election. He won a landslide. He performed better than any Republican since Ronald Reagan. And in some ways, he actually outperformed Ronald Reagan. He won all 7 swing states. He won the popular vote. He won parts of New York City, Los Angeles. He won Miami-Dade County. He won a record number of Latino votes for Republican. He won the Muslim communities of Dearborn, Michigan. He won a record number of Jewish voters, more than any Republican ever. I mean, it was unbelievable what happened. And a lot of people in the United States and people like you that travel a lot sort of like felt that Trump was going to win. I felt that Trump was going to win myself. But I think everyone was surprised at the scale. And one of the shifts that has taken place is like the Democratic Party in the United States used to be the party of the working class. But what has happened with this like woke nonsense that's taken over the Western world, but especially in America, is the Democratic Party has become basically a party of like white elites virtue signaling, you know, that they care about everybody else. And the Republican Party has become the party of the working class. I mean, that's what happened. It was working class voters in Pennsylvania, religious voters, you know, Catholics in Pennsylvania, you know, that made all the difference. So this was Donald Trump won the presidential election, not with the white evangelical vote, you know, as the press is prone to say about 2016. Donald Trump won the election with a multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multi-generational multi-class coalition. He won more young Americans than any Republican, I think, ever. His approval rating right now with 18 to 29-year-olds in the United States is like 59%. This was a huge, huge change.
Yeah, and that's amazing, given the kind of propaganda and lawsuits, lawfare, and the constant vilification that has gone on against Trump, especially after 2020. And you know, somebody like Mark Cuban saying he doesn't know how to work with strong women. And I look at all his recent appointments and I say, how does this even sink, you know? Mark Cuban, where are you? Who are these people whom he's appointing? Tulsi Gabbard, Susie, you know, Pam Bondi? Are these weak women? Are these weak women
no,
or
it's,
what?
It's, and I think your point is well taken. Like, the press decided, unfortunately, for our world, I mean, the press has become more political, and they decided to put their thumb on the scale, and they decided to favor one candidate over the other. And then also opponents of Donald Trump decided to take the nuclear option, you know, and sue him again in like something like close to 100 legal cases trying to keep him out of the election. But the American people in a democracy, because we're still a strong democracy, they said no. They said, in our democracy, we will not use our justice system this way. And, you know, and all this stuff of, you know, Donald Trump is, you know, anti this, anti that. You're exactly right. I mean, Susie Wiles will be the first woman who's chief of staff. Marco Rubio will be the highest ranking Latino in the history of the United States government as Secretary of State. You have and even on the sort of like progressive side, I mean, the Treasury Secretary is gay. He's a conservative, you know, which is, we're told the Democratic Party, like that whole community, they're all Democrats. Like, no, they're conservatives in that community as well. You know, for years and years and years, I heard like, we need a president that will have a cabinet of rivals that will disagree and argue over stuff. Donald Trump's put together a cabinet of rivals. He has more Democrats in his cabinet than any Republican, and certainly more of the other party than any Democratic president, you know, has had. He has libertarians in the coalition. He has peace through strength sort of right-wing Republicans in the coalition. He has social conservatives in the coalition. And I also think on the right, you know, a lot of – I come from the conservative evangelical community, and we've been so under the gun for so long, like, we get nervous about these broad coalitions. But that's also the power of democracy. We're not a theocracy in the United States of America. You know, we're a democracy, and the representative voice of the people spoke. And Trump has put together a cabinet and a government that is reflective of that. And from a national security perspective and human rights, which intersects with the two, foreign policy, like, it's a very, very strong. It's going to be a very strong government. It's not a pro-war government. It's a pro-peace government. But Trump will not believe in, for instance, he will be anti-war, but not pro-disengagement. Right. So the foreign policy is going to be peace through strength. It's going to believe in American Western power and deterrence, and yet it wants to end wars, not cause more wars, you know, around the world. And, you know, we couldn't ask for a better Secretary of State than someone like Marco Rubio.
What came across as I watched the campaign and post-campaign is that this whole team of rivals that he has built, though they may not all be evangelical Christians and all, but they are not apologetic about the issue of faith and the fact that America is rooted in a Christian civilization.
Yeah, they're pro stuff, not just against stuff, and they know what they believe. I mean, the truth is that truth was under assault in America. I mean, had Elon Musk not bought Twitter and turned it into X, like, we were even losing our public square. I mean, it's just a fact. Like, we had our security agencies, the FBI, the Department of Justice, working with the social media companies to censor American points of view on our social media. Like, that should not happen in democracies. Of course, you can't, like, you know, spew hate speech and cause harm and violence to people, but it's okay to ask whether, you know, whether this vaccine is appropriate to take, or whether the pandemic may have been leaked from a lab in China, or whether, you know, in America, you actually have our freedom of speech actually gives you the freedom to be offensive to people, you know, and yet what we saw was this, like, soft authoritarianism that was coming from, you know, the progressive movement in the United States that had overtaken the government. And America said, no, we will have our freedom of speech, and we will argue all day long with everybody if we want to. And it's a good change.
What do you see is the reason why the U.S. has slipped so badly into what I call the woke culture? You call it the soft authoritarianism. I say it's not that soft. It was, just look at the lawfare that they engaged against Trump, the IRS being used against some religious groups. What has caused this, you know, slip? And now everybody's reacting. We don't want this. We don't want men in women's sports or in women's bathrooms. So what has happened to America in the last 10, 15 years, or what?
I mean, I think several things. First of all, Americans have, like, big hearts. Right, so we want to help people, and, like, yeah, we don't want people to be offended. We don't want to insult people. We want to, and I think some political activists sort of use that instinct against us. Right, so we, you know, in an effort to be a post-racial society, we became anti-racist, and anti-racism is, like, it comes from critical theory. Critical theory actually comes from post-colonial theory. It actually emerged in our seminaries. It is an inherently anti-Christian idea. It's a criticism of you know, colonialism that was that spread Christianity. And of course, you and I, of all people, are critical of aspects of colonialism. But we also recognize that for all the injustice that took place, you know, also some good things came along: hospitals, educational institutions, you know, the certain ideas, and so. You know, what we ended up with this very, very simplistic, you know, kind of view of history, and all these activists, professors, professing to be professors, they were actually political activists. And then in the meantime, the country's sort of losing its moral core. So if you don't believe that some things are right and some things are wrong, or some things are true and some things are a lie, then all that's left is expediency. It's political expediency. The ends justify the means. So if I believe that Donald Trump is going to deconstruct democracy, then not only can I stop him if I try to sue him, I must stop him. It's my responsibility. And I just think a lot of people got propagandized, and there was a wake up call in the summer before the election, when a maniac you know, tried to end the former president's life. And I believe we witnessed a miracle. I mean, it was like a millimeter. 1 millimeter. He turned his head at the split second. I think God saved his life in that moment. And then it happened again. Yeah. And so Americans are like, you know, wait a minute. Like, maybe all the stuff we've been told is not, you know, exactly true. And the good news is the Democratic Party got the message. And I think we're going to see in the coming years, maybe not by the next election because there's a lot to fix, but I think we're going to see a stronger Republican Party and a stronger Democratic Party. And instead of, like, trying to see who, you know, argue over who's more woke, you know, the parties are going to be arguing over who's more representative of America. And that's a good thing, because I have to tell you, you know, I'm afraid that we were very, very close to losing the America that many of us have known. Some of that with intentionality, some of it not. And listen, no administration's perfect. Donald Trump will not be perfect. Donald Trump will do plenty of things that, you know, Americans on both sides of the aisle will disagree with. That's the way democracy is supposed to work as well. But you can't use the justice system to try to shut down your political opponents in a democracy. You can't say that everybody that doesn't look like you is a racist. You can't shut down conversations. Like in the UK, for instance, they banned, you know, we spent a lot of time in the UK, they banned certain treatments for minors,
children,
you know, in the United States, that hasn't been banned. You can have states in the United States where you can have a minor
being forced to,
you know, an irreversible medical decision that totally changes the rest of their life, and their parents don't even have to know it happened. A school could do that without informing the parent. Like, that's nuts. We don't do that in America.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, activists we're pushing an agenda, and you know, and you don't have to be anti anything to question the efficacy of certain ideas.
And you see, truth and freedom are all self-evident, right? And it's hard to believe that America does this kind of things on minor children. You know, in our country, there is a law on transgenderism, but no intervention medically can be done on whoever claims to have a transgender issue and sexual, you know, dysphoria, right? That's what they call it. Unless they're 18 years old. And you can't intervene. And parents are required to be involved in the process. And a professional. And here you have a country claiming to have some kind of a Christian heritage.
Yeah, and you can't, I mean, you can't vote. You can't drink. All these things you can't do, but you can permanently change yourself. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I wanted to be like a dinosaur. Like, I wanted to be like an astronaut. Like, there are all kinds of kids have crazy ideas. Like, but you could go to a counselor, to school, and here's what drives me crazy about it: you can't even have the conversation without being accused of bigotry. I'm a conservative evangelical Christian. Okay, I'm about as right wing as you could possibly get. I have friends in that community. There's a human rights activist that I collaborate with to try to help people, you know, that are victims of communism, who comes from that community. But where we were going in the United States, you couldn't ask a question about it was okay for an 8-year-old kid to be permanently changed for the rest of their life without their parents knowing about it, without being accused of bigotry. And that's not acceptable.
And being canceled.
And being canceled.
And that also...
And that's a big problem, Bishop. I mean, we still haven't solved this problem. I mean, our universities, like 90% of the professors at our top universities are only aligned with one political party. You know, the schools of arts and sciences at many of our universities are the incubator for this woke ideology. And you can – by the way, I'm not saying you can't teach it. You can't teach DEI. You can't teach critical theory. You should. You teach these things. You argue over these things. But it is not okay – to either shut up those who disagree with you, or in a university of all places, to not have people with alternative points of view.
Yeah. And that includes the rise of anti-Semitism.
That's right.
Which we have seen post-October
7th. I mean, here's the thing. Had Kamala Harris, I have the hardest time pronouncing her name. That's even a funny thing. Like, you were accused in the United States of America of being a racist and
a
bigot if you mispronounced her name.
Yeah.
I, you know, I've never intentionally mispronounced her name. It's a hard name to pronounce. And so, you know, Kamala, had she selected Josh Shapiro as her VP, the governor of Pennsylvania, who is very, very popular, you know, she may have won Pennsylvania. She may have had the chance of winning the election. But as most people believe, because of pressure from the anti-Semitic left, the progressive left in the Democratic Party, she chose not to do that. She picked the single most progressive governor in the United States of America is her running mate, Tim Walz. And it's for that reason. That's why she picked him.
So a couple of questions where you can give me a one-line answer.
Okay.
Under Trump, will anti-Semitism be faced and dealt with more robustly than it has been done under the previous regime?
Yes, and there will be consequences. So if schools harbor anti-Semites and they're international students, their visas will be revoked and they will be deported from the country. If schools aren't treating Jewish students well, if they're not feeling safe at their schools, there will be consequences from the Department of Justice related to aid and other things. It will be dealt with.
Second question. Will there be an economic revival under Trump administration?
Yeah, they're going to be – it's called the 3-3-3 plan. And it's not the official policy, but it's something that a lot of people in this world talk about. There'll be a 3% of economic growth that will come from deregulation, 3% of economic growth that will come from just growth, from tax cut and other purposes, and there will be 3 million barrels a day. Because the United States of America is actually the foremost energy power in the world. We have actually more energy than the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And by the way, instead of buying energy from Russia, Europe can buy energy from the United States of America.
Absolutely. Next question. With the huge illegal immigration problem that America has self-created for itself, and Trump clamping down on illegal immigration, what's the message you send to those around the world who want to migrate to America, but legally, for education, for jobs and all? Will the Trump administration facilitate that, or will there be just anti-immigration?
I mean, people, this is part of the media sort of the political games the media was playing, but Trump is not anti-immigration. Trump is pro-immigration. He's just pro-legal immigration. He wants our best and brightest in the world to study in the United States and be able to stay here and get a job afterwards and experience their success in the United States of America. He wants people that are here responsibly and legally to be able to have a faster path to citizenship or to a green card. The issue is that the Biden administration just opened the border entirely. I mean, and it's not theoretical. The Biden administration's Department of Justice released the figures that there were 13,000 murderers, known murderers, that came across the southern border. The conservative number is somewhere around 11 million people crossed over the Biden administration. It's probably between 13 and 15 million. And so, and by the way, it will be a massive effort to deport illegal immigrants, but they're not going to be deporting the people that are causing less harm to American society. The people they're going to be deporting first are the criminals, you know, the people who are convicted of crimes in other countries. And it is true that the Venezuelans, for instance, the dictatorial regime in Venezuela, they did send their criminals in caravans into our poorest border. And so we will have a robust immigration system for all the right people. But on day one, the border will be shut and whatever's necessary will be done in order to address this not only national security issue, but the single greatest driver of human trafficking all over the world. The United States of America should not be complicit in the single greatest system of human trafficking in the world. And we are by default that because of keeping our southern border
out of
control.
And one last question, Johnny. What will the Trump administration mean to freedom of faith, conscience, and speech?
It will be non-negotiable. Our First Amendment will be interpreted as it was written, and we will be, as a country, an advocate for those freedoms all over the world. You can take that to the bank.
Thank you. It's been great chatting with you on this.
Thank you, Bishop.
And I'm sure our Babel Undone listeners are better informed about the possibilities of a Trump administration. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.